Welcome to the Medical Journal of Australia podcast. The MJA is Australia's top peer-reviewed general medical journal, publishing groundbreaking research to the medical community since 1914. My name is Kate Swanell, and I am the MJA's news and online editor. These days, when we think of HIV, it's the great biomedical advances of the past decade that have seen the diagnosis rate of HIV drop significantly in Australia's non-Aboriginal population. But it's another story altogether among Aboriginal Australians, where the diagnosis rate has actually increased, widening the gap. Associate Professor James Ward is the head of Aboriginal Health Infectious Disease at the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute. He's my special guest on the pod today.
It was the launch of the last national surveillance report, which really showed an increase in HIV notifications in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, while there's been a reduction in Australian-born non-Indigenous people.
So what is the HIV diagnosis rate right now for the Indigenous population?
So over the last 5 years, the rate of diagnoses is 6.4 per 100,000, and that compares to 2.9 in the non-Indigenous population per 100,000. And the rate has increased by 33% in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population over the last 5 years, compared to a 22% reduction in the non-Indigenous Australian-born population. And so there's a real apparent inequity occurring in terms of the response to HIV in the two populations.
Yeah. So this is a gap that's actually increasing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. How does it compare, for example, with the Canadian First Nations population, the diagnosis rate there? Is there a sort of similarity in what's happening there?
Yeah, so there are some provinces in Canada where large Aboriginal populations live where they're doing much worse than Australian Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, partly because the epidemics are driven differently. So in one province, for instance, Saskatchewan, which has been well documented, there was an exponential increase in HIV diagnoses among First Nations people in that province, largely driven by injecting drug use. So availability of cheaper illicit drugs such as crack cocaine and limited availability of clean, sterile injecting equipment really led to an exponential increase in HIV in that population in that province. In terms of the rest of the Canadian First Nations and Aboriginal population, the rate is slightly higher than the Australian rate, and that's always been the case. And if you compare it to Maori in New Zealand, they have a lower rate than Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people.
Right.
And similarly with American Indian population, limited amount of information, but a lower rate of diagnoses than here in Australia. So it goes sort of in those four comparable countries, Canada, Australia, American Indians in the US, and then New Zealand Maori people.
Which brings me to the question, do Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people acquire HIV in different ways than the non-Aboriginal population?
Yeah, there's a different epidemiological profile, if you like, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. You'll know that the majority of HIV acquired in Australia occurs among men who have sex with men. Just over 80% of the diagnoses that occur in Australia occur in that population. Where just over 50% of our diagnoses in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population occur among men who have sex with men.
Okay.
And the rest are obviously heterosexual people, but heterosexual people are pretty half and half for the other 46%, really.
Mm-hmm.
About half and half are acquired through heterosexually acquired sexual contact, and the other half are acquired through injecting drug use. And that's what we really kind of worry about, is this different epidemiological profile that exists for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people than the non-Aboriginal population, because most of the prevention programs in this country are rolled out for men who have sex with other men.
Yeah.
And there's been limited effort and limited efforts for the other population groups. So we're kind of in some ways playing a catch-up game to try and boost the amount of effort for those other populations who've, rightly so, and where there's been limited health promotion and prevention work occurring for the rest of the Australian population.
What about the biomedical side of this. What's the uptake like, for example, for PrEP in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people?
Look, I think the biomedical advances that have occurred in HIV have been great, and the science clearly led to these breakthroughs in HIV prevention. So PrEP is the daily drug you take, currently it's recommended daily in Australia, you take to prevent HIV. PrEP is, we think, there's been, so PrEP up until April this year was on trials in Australia. So it was large clinical trials in five or six of the major jurisdictions in Australia. And the uptake wasn't on parity with the non-Aboriginal population. So we think about less than 2% of the population on PrEP were Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. So we've only got anecdotal kind of figures but from the trials themselves. But the uptake wasn't as great as what we'd hoped. But it's in some ways it's not surprising given that the distribution of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across the country, health literacy around HIV overall is probably lower, and health literacy about these newer biomedical approaches to prevention are probably not as widely known in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population as they are in a population such as gay men in cities, for instance, who are kind of bombarded with new advances in HIV. Medicine and prevention. So the other really concerning thing is there's two really new approaches that have been trialled, I think, not only in Australia but globally. So the one is PrEP as the prevention, one of the main measures for prevention now.
Yeah.
Still promoting condom use and clean needles for people who inject drugs, but PrEP is really being rolled out as a major prevention tool around the globe now. Some countries slower than others, but the other side to preventing new cases of HIV, particularly, is to try and get the number of people who are living with HIV on treatment, and to, if they're on treatment and they adhere to treatment, they can really have greater better outcomes in health, but also they can prevent HIV being transmitted because they have an undetectable amount of virus in their blood. And so what we think is happening for our population to kind of create this gap that's emerging very rapidly in between the two populations is that Aboriginal people are not taking up PrEP as readily, and they're also, we haven't got the systems right for people living with HIV to enable them to maintain treatments and get to an undetectable viral level. We know some very preliminary data, trying to look at national databases of Aboriginal people living with HIV, and the proportion of people on treatment, in care, and with an undetectable viral level is somewhat lower than the non-Aboriginal population. And until we get parity in that area, I think we're going to be struggling, and this gap might continue to increase between the two populations.
James Ward is my guest today. He's the co-author of A Perspective published in the MJA. Like all the content in the journal's Indigenous Health edition, it is permanently open access at mja.com.au. So you say this, we haven't got the system right. What would you change right now to get that working better?
I think this issue around for people living with HIV, I mean, it's the HIV is a, there are many social and social determinants that drive good quality care for HIV, for people living with HIV. So things like money. Do people have enough money to pay for the gap in medications that's required in most of the jurisdictions?
Yeah.
Do they have enough money to get to clinics for their regular appointments? Do they have refrigeration in a safe place, or are they living in crowded environments where they don't really want to disclose their HIV status by having their medication in fridges, where they're living with extended family and lots of other people in overcrowded housing? They're the kind of issues, I think, that are outside of health.
Mm-hmm.
But even inside of health, I think there are some issues that prevent people from engaging and staying engaged in care. It's not the same for all people, I know, but people often take breaks, and or people don't want to engage in treatment after diagnosis. I think we've got to do much better at trying to get to parity in terms of the proportion of people living with HIV to an undetectable level of HIV to non-Indigenous population.
From a culturally relevant and acceptable point of view, How do we do that? How do we improve the literacy of, if you like, of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population about HIV and its treatment?
Yeah. So I think a range of different strategies are required. Certainly, we're trying to do low literacy resources in terms of some of the work we're doing here to try and improve health literacy in remote communities. We're trying to get languages in overlaid on some of the animation work that we've done recently to make sure that people, even with English as their second or third language, are not being disadvantaged by the resources that are being developed for people like themselves.
Yeah,
that's certainly one way. The involvement of Aboriginal people living with HIV, I think, is critical. So lived experiences and getting people out to communities with lived experiences to kind of say, this is not the big scary thing it was 30 years ago. This is a manageable condition now, and there are treatments and there are good doctors around, there are good nurses around that you could see, and no one really knows any difference anymore whether you have HIV or not. Mm-hmm. So we're trying to get more of the involvement of people living with HIV into our communities to make sure they see it not as what it used to be like. There's still a fair bit of stigma associated with HIV,
sure,
not only in our communities, but overall.
Yep.
And I think, getting our clinicians all on the same page about the importance of testing and finding HIV early and getting and promoting treatment to people living with HIV are the kind of strategies I think that we have been trying to focus in on over the last little while.
How urgent is this, James? I mean, is this in danger of getting out of control in terms of an epidemic within the Indigenous population? Or?
Yeah, we're trying to prevent a concentrated epidemic occurring in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, like it has happened in the province of Saskatchewan, in Canada, as I mentioned earlier. In some ways, we might be a little bit protected by the number of people on PrEP in Australia, who, and if the rates continue to drop down in the non-Indigenous population, it means that, and more people will get to an undetectable viral load on, through treatment.
Yep.
In some ways, we might be a little bit protected by that, but that's really unspoken. There are areas in Australia where there are outbreaks of HIV among largely Aboriginal populations. So the sexual networks are different. The networks are different overall.
Yeah, yeah.
So we might be not so protected by it. But in some ways, it's going to be a watch and tell. And I don't think we can wait any longer to instigate increased efforts in this area, both clinical prevention and community engagement and buy-in for our population.
Are you getting much buy-in from the government at this point?
I think Aboriginal health is a big portfolio.
Mm-hmm.
We have been lobbying and advocating for increased resources into STIs and HIV in communities. We've got a very high burden of STIs, particularly in remote communities, which also increases the risk for HIV to be transmitted if there are other infections. There has been some efforts recently to have an enhanced response to a syphilis outbreak that's occurred across the north of Australia and even more recently into the south Australia. But we do need much more. We absolutely need much more to make sure that this doesn't escalate into a concentrated epidemic, and then we're chasing our tails trying to get everyone into treatment and into care. So I think it'd be much wiser to invest upfront now to make sure we don't get to that point where Saskatchewan got to and are now chasing their tails, thinking, how did this happen in this day? We've got all modern advances in medicine and prevention methods. So I think we're trying to prevent that. It's kind of been on the radar for a long time. The last 5 years is really kind of the gap has got wider.
Yep.
Partly that's because of the success in the non-Aboriginal population, but also because we haven't changed our efforts in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population. So I think now is the right time to increase efforts to make sure we don't get to a concentrated epidemic.
Thanks for your time, James. I really appreciate it.
No worries.
My thanks to my special guest today. Don't forget that all our podcasts are open access and available at www.mja.com.au/podcasts. Or you can subscribe to our feed at iTunes. My name's Kate Swanell, and we'll see you next time.